CFO Radio is the only radio show that explores the passion of today's CFO and examines the innermost thoughts of the financial world, financial perspectives of tomorrow. Welcome to CFO Radio. I'm Lorraine Chilvers.
But first, we'd like to thank our sponsors. Delaney Consulting, LLC, providing financial leadership to fast-growing companies. Interim management and executive placement for the finance function. Visit DelaneyLLC.com and learn why 100% of their clients describe Delaney's services as outstanding and excellent. Also, Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and other financial executives. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter. And finally, National Association of Corporate Directors, an association created for directors by directors whose mission is to advance exemplary board leadership. We are sponsored by the Atlanta chapter.
And this week's CFO Radio News is brought to us by CFO.com. And it's very relevant to our topic today and our guest. The title is, Do Finance Practices Hinder Optimal Hiring? Corporate performance and accounting systems don't take into account everything that's important about some hiring initiatives. And this is written by John Boudreau. Consider how your organization would react to the following situation. You're recovering from the economic downturn and your strategic forecast suggests growing demand for your products and the services in the long run, but you need to control costs, and cost control remains highly important. Your strategic planning includes both financial and human capital issues, and that plan suggests that you will need additional technical resources and professionals, engineers, software designers, R&D, scientists, etc., for future design of products and services. Let's use engineers in this example, but this applies to most technical professions. During the strategic planning process, everyone agrees that more engineers will be needed in the future, and also that it takes time to develop newly hired engineers into fully productive designers. Now, one of your business leaders has two goals this year: complete 10 projects and to hire 6 design engineers. At the end of the year, they report that they've completed all their projects and they did it while hiring only 3 engineers. How would your performance system evaluate this result? In my work with organization leaders, I virtually always get the answer that this leader would be rewarded. The traditional performance system would reflect the value of projects completed, and the accounting system would reflect a positive budget variance because the leader achieved the budgets with half the labor costs. In the short term, all seems well. But in a year or two, as the projects begin to materialize, the organization suddenly realizes there are not enough engineers to meet customer demand. And it's with that backdrop that we are meeting with our guest today, Janet Rankin. And she is the Regional Commissioner, Bureau of Labor Statistics, U.S. Department of Labor. We're thrilled to have you on the show. Welcome, Janet.
Thank you very much. Nice to be here.
Well, Janet, I'll give a little bit about your background so that the readers, the listeners, know about you and where you've come from. You originated, you were born in Charlotte, North Carolina, so you're from the South. You had a BA in political science from Furman University in South Carolina, and you had postgraduate studies, both statistics and economics, from Southern Methodist University, Dallas, Texas. Your work history has been predominantly with the Bureau of Labor Statistics for many years, starting as a field economist for the Consumer Price Index, the CPI, and then you took several years in a couple of different opportunities, urban employment analyst, and I'm kind of keen to find out what exactly that is, and then as branch chief for unemployment occupational surveys. Then you moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and became the assistant regional commissioner for federal state statistical programs, and today your role is regional commissioner for the Southeast region. So my goodness, that is quite a lot. You have a significant number of meritorious awards and achievements, perhaps a little bit too long to list, but several that came from the Department of U.S. Department of Labor, several that came from local, for example, Who's Who in Georgia, Who's Who is in the South, Who's Who in the Southwest, Atlanta Economics Club, and you are also a member and have served on the board of Zonta Club of Atlanta. My understanding is that you have quite a substantial role, but I'll read what the details say. As Regional Commissioner, Janet provides leadership and direction for all Bureau of Labor Statistics, economic and statistical programs in the 8-state Southeast region. These programs generate information on the labor force, employment and unemployment, safety and health, prices and living conditions, and occupational employment and compensation levels. So, wow. Now I can take a breath. That's a long intro. Welcome to the show again.
Thank you.
What I'd like to do is to get straight into it. We've had statistics that came out today, and they are all across the news. But let's start a little bit back from there. So you're the Atlanta Regional Commissioner for the Bureau of Labor Statistics, known locally and nationally as the BLS. Tell me how you got interested in BLS, and how long have you been with the agency?
A long, long time ago when I was in college, I was always interested in government service. And I knew at some point that's what I would do for a career. One of my friends in college used to get postcards from her sister. Her sister worked for the Consumer Price Index for BLS out of Atlanta, actually. And she went everywhere. At the time, the Southeast region went to New Mexico. So we would get these glamorous to us postcards of places we always heard about and never went. And I thought, that is the job for me.
The lure of travel, huh?
The lure of travel. I didn't switch my major. I stayed with political science, but did economics as my as second major. And only to qualify for the BLS. Uh-huh. So I was hired for BLS, and only last week I received my 45th service year pin.
Goodness, wow.
That's a long time.
That is a long time.
It's interesting. Let me tell you, another survey we do is the National Longitudinal Survey, where we track people over time. And one of the interesting statistics out of it now, and this is referring to people who were born in the latter part of the baby boom. I'm a little older than they are, but for them, they have had 11 jobs by the time they reach age 44. I've had one job for 45 years. So I'm...
You're skewing the statistics, right? I'm skewing them.
Certainly am.
You're on the high end of the bell curve. That's a better place to be, Janet.
It's a long time, but I've enjoyed every bit of it.
So 11 jobs by the time they're 44. And mm-hmm. in today's scenario, a lot of job positions might be contract. Would that be including a contract position as well as a traditional
right.
employment?
That would be any job for which you received pay.
But it might exclude the lemonade stand.
Probably so.
So here you are, you're doing your degree, you found out about something, and so often that is the situation. But something that you mentioned I wanted to elaborate a little bit upon, you said that you did economics in order that you would be able to, did I understand, qualify for the BLS? Are there certain topics and educational credentials that you would need in order to be relevant?
That's a good question. All federal agencies are different in that the requirements they have for particular jobs. Our agency has what is called a positive education requirement, meaning you have to have a bachelor's degree, you have to have 21 hours in economics, and at least 3 hours in statistics. So once I learned that, again from my friend's sister, I took the economics and barely got through statistics that first time, but took statistics, and that was not on my original plan.
Uh-huh. Well, that's neat. So that was very helpful. And we find so often that friends and family can be that first form of mentor. Perhaps as one goes through a career, it might be more formal mentor relationships, somebody in the organization, somebody within the firm. But certainly sounds as if you had a really great tip in the direction. So now you're excited. Now you've got your the right degree and you're in your first position. Let's talk a little bit about the agency because it's all a little unknown to me and I'm sure to our listeners. I'm guessing that the agency gets confused with the Census Bureau and maybe vice versa. Do you do the same thing? What is the difference between BLS and the Census Bureau?
We are both federal independent statistical agencies established to collect and analyze information on which the government and private officials can make decisions. We're alike, but we're different. The difference is the Census Bureau expertise is talking with people, i.e. the census. They actually ask an individual in a household what they're doing and get information that way. The expertise of BLS is talking with officials, company officials. We do payroll statistics. So where they're asking you, what did you do? We're asking, can we see your payroll records to determine how many people you hired or how many people you fired or whatever?
Sure.
So together, we're the strongest statistical system in the world. Mm-hmm. We have other countries send statisticians to both the Census Bureau and BLS on a regular basis.
For purposes of learning and training?
Correct. And another interesting thing, because the Census Bureau has the expertise in dealing with people, we contract with them to collect one of our largest surveys, the current population survey. That's the survey that generates the national unemployment rate. And that comes from people, not payroll records. So we get the money from Congress because it's part of our mission. We contract with them because they're better at it than we are. And so we're good friends, actually.
That sounds good. I like that. Good friends. Well, can you explain what the Bureau of Labor Statistics, BLS, does?
We're the principal federal agency responsible for measuring labor market activity, working conditions, and price changes in the economy. So we collect, analyze, disseminate, which is a huge function for us, essential economic information to support public and private decision making. And as an independent statistical agency, we provide products and services that are objective, timely, accurate, and relevant. People have to trust the data, and they do.
Sure.
So we publish data on employment and unemployment, consumer and producer inflation, wages and benefits, occupational injuries and illnesses, job turnover, consumer spending, time use, labor productivity. We usually employ statisticians, mathematical statisticians, and predominantly economists.
And I've used the statistics before. You have a great website. For anybody listening, you can go to the Bureau of Labor Statistics and BLS.com. There's a huge amount of data. You can also sign up for, I believe my information comes either weekly or monthly. It drops into your email, and then you just click a link. It takes you to the appropriate website populated with that new data, new analytics. And the data is national. You can split it down by industry and within that by geographic region. And you can do quite a lot of parsing of data. And one of the things that I like is that you can download it into Excel or some kind of a spreadsheet, and you can really do your own analytic analysis from it. It's quite easy. When I first went to it, it was a couple of years ago, and I really was surprised at how easy it was. I hate to say it, but some of the government websites, you've really got to know what you're looking for in order to go get it. But I liked yours.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. We are continually working to improve that website and, as you say, to make it more user-friendly, because we realize nobody wants a website that just has a gazillion numbers. It's got to make sense. So we've done, you might want to check it out recently. We've updated
some
things and made some changes.
That's
right.
Neat. I like that. Well, today it is across the news. A lot of private individuals as well as corporations and other maybe even international agencies and corporations look at the statistics, the data. And I understand your agency released the monthly press release today on the employment situation. In fact, this morning, I'm going to get into asking you a little bit about, tell us about the numbers. But before we do that, I'm kind of curious. This has got to be highly confidential. How and when does it get released? How does the press get it? How do you get it? Tell us a little bit about the mystique surrounding and the confidentiality surrounding it.
There is unbelievable confidentiality around it and a lot of mystique, I must agree. Our national office actually cranks out the numbers. We, in a regional office, there are six regional offices across the country. The national office puts out the information. So there's a national press release. In this region, I have press releases when on the same day we're releasing information for areas around here.
So today you're putting out a press release?
Well, today we are emphasizing the national press release.
I see.
So we have a lot of users in the South who call us and get the same explanation as the numbers as if they had called the national office where the number was created. And that happens because 30 minutes prior to the release, which is 8:30 in the morning, so at 8 o'clock, we get a copy of what the Bureau is going to release. We also have access to testimony that our commissioner, the head of our agency, will be providing the Joint Economic Committee of Congress. So we know what they're saying, which makes a whole lot of sense for us to say the same thing.
Sure.
It's an interesting situation, actually. We have a locked room. We have people who have special clearances to be in that locked room to receive that information at 8 o'clock.
So what, there's a fax machine in the corner or a computer, or how does that work?
There is no fax machine. There is one piece of equipment, and that is a laptop computer that is used only to receive the confidential numbers. It's in that locked room. You have to sign in when you go in. You sign in when you come out. And it gives us 30 minutes to digest the numbers so that when they are released at 8:31, you can call our office and we can speak with you with some degree of knowledge about what you've just heard on the radio.
Sure, sure. So you're locked up, you're in a room, you're reading the new data, and you did that this morning, right?
Well, actually, this morning I was driving over here to talk with you. So what I had to do in your parking lot, actually, was call my regional office at 8:31. They don't break the rules even for me.
Wow. So and you had to wait until the public time allowed.
Correct. So I got a verbal kind of a topside. I haven't seen the release yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm treated just like everybody else unless I'm in the office and in
the
room.
Room.
And if I'm in the room, I can't come out till 8:31.
I see. So, well, let's get on to talking a little bit about the numbers. Tell us a bit about the numbers as they've been released today and what they mean to the general public.
The main number is employment, but also at the same release, we have unemployment. So we call it the employment situation. We divide it into the two categories because the data come from two different surveys. I talked about the current population survey that the census does for us. That generates the unemployment rate. The employment numbers come from a BLS survey called the Current Employment Statistics Survey. So what we released this morning is that between June and July, the economy gained 117,000 jobs. I was watching CNN this morning, here in your office, actually, and they said that most people were surprised at this substantial gain, and that's probably based on last month, we increased only 46,000. And the month before that, in May, it was 53,000. So
each of the 3 months have been consecutively positive in the right direction for employment.
Correct. Still a sluggish recovery, but clearly showing a recovery. If you look at the industries, which might be interesting to your listeners, healthcare, retail trade, manufacturing, and mining went up. government continued to go down. Overall, there was a loss of 37,000 government jobs nationwide. And if you break that down, the vast majority was in state government. I suspect that figure, that's down 23,000 for state government, that probably reflects the fact that, you know, the governor of Minnesota kind of closed the state, and that would be a giant part of that 23,000. So one would expect, now that they are back in business, that the number will be quite different next month.
Sure. So health, retail, manufacturing, and mining, that's great news, particularly retail. Retail has such a strong impact for what I would call secondary and tertiary positive elements of spending.
Correct. Retail was up 26,000, healthcare 31,000. Healthcare has fared very well throughout the recession, so this is even better news for them.
Healthcare 31,000. So healthcare was the largest increase.
Correct.
Interestingly enough, we hear a lot about doctors and nurses and practitioners that are leaving the industry because of some of the changes that are occurring. But what we're seeing here, the statistics show, certainly for the most recent month, that there's been an increase.
Correct. And that, back to my friends in the Census Bureau, the population data that they release show clearly that we are an aging population. So the greater the percentage of older people, if you will, we need and demand health care. And I would not be surprised at all for health care just to keep on rising. It's a very healthy industry in this country.
Well, why should CFOs be interested at all in the numbers, and particularly about today's numbers?
Well, the employment numbers are a direct reflection of how the U.S. economy is faring. You can see which businesses or which industries are doing well, what industries you might say are in trouble. Businesses and CFOs can use these data to gauge how their industry is doing in the current situation. The unemployment rate is another crucial indicator of the economy. It shows how many people are looking for work, which would be of interest to anyone who has responsibilities for hiring or the workforce within their own company. The unemployment rate today nationally was 9.1. We say that is virtually or essentially unchanged. It actually is 9.1. Last month was 9.2. It just statistically is not a difference.
Sure, understand. And that's why statisticians such as yourself can help us really understand those numbers. It's somewhat disappointing news that we're stable, but in the same regard, it is positive that we are stable and not increasing.
Correct. I would agree with that.
So are there any other BLS statistics that CFOs should be interested in?
Most definitely. We have a whole lot of information. Pay and benefit levels. Employee benefits and salaries are a large part of every company's bottom line, and we release information on employer cost. Actually, what does it cost for you to stay in business? And then we can break it out and show how much of that is salaries and benefits. Very, very interesting information. We also can help firms identify opportunities for new products or new markets for existing products, looking at consumer spending data, which is part of our price program. Our producer price data is useful when negotiating purchasing contracts. Most all have escalation clauses on what happens over a long-term contract. We can tell you and help you establish that rate.
And I would imagine over time, you can, as you read these statistics, you can see patterns.
Yes, we can. And we can provide that to CFOs. I mean, we maintain a wealthy history of all the data and can provide that. You can get it from our office or right off the website. We also have information on labor cost that can assist in creating sales contracts. We provide measures of productivity growth, employee turnover, which help CFOs compare their business to what's going on in the total industry, and workplace injuries and illnesses. I think CFOs as well as other officials in industry are all interested in how best to protect workers. We can show you what industries are having problems, what machines are causing the problems, what shifts, all sorts of interesting information.
So you can look at that, and certainly when I've done that, one of the elements that I've enjoyed, it makes my task easier of looking at the BLS website, is that you can get it statistically downloaded into, let's say, Excel. You can get it graphically, and the detail of point and click. The detail is happening behind some kind of website engine, but basically you get graphical information, and so you don't have to create your own graphs. They're already there.
Right. What I would say to anyone who supports a CFO, a staff member who might be responsible for going to our website, most people, and this is my personal opinion, not anything statistical, a graph can say a lot more than five pages of numbers. And once you present to somebody who's making a decision a quick look-see, then they can say, they can point at what they really want numbers for. I find that particularly useful myself.
Sure. And to your point, when you're looking at going into negotiating sales contracts, when you're looking at determining price increases for your labor costs, I've been in those positions previously. And at the time, 10 and maybe 15 years ago, it would have been great for me to have known about the BLS website because you might come with a standard X percent increase being what you think that you should give to your workforce, and it may not be anywhere near the national average. It may be higher or it may be lower. But you can also find that by industry, I think. Can you not?
Yes, you can. The other thing, when you go to our website, it is a national website. Right in the top right-hand corner, you can click and get a map of the U.S., zip down to Georgia and click, and you immediately get into my website here in Georgia. And it gives the phone number. We've got four economists whose sole function is to help people digest numbers.
And I've actually called that number, and I was quite amazed that somebody picked up on the other line, quite chirpy, in fact, and really helped me. And in fact, first time I called, they spent, I think it was almost an hour on the phone with me. They showed me the statistics. They pointed me into the direction of, well, have you thought about this? And it was something that I hadn't. And basically, I told them what I was trying to analyze. And they spent a lot of time making sure that I understood the data, waited a couple of seconds or minutes for me to put it up on my machine, make sure that I could read it. And they actually went through month by month and showed me a little bit. It wasn't hours of time, but it was a substantial amount of time that helped me in my role. It really was very helpful.
I am really glad to hear that.
And this was before me connecting with you. So this is for those listening, this is an independent, unbiased perspective.
That's wonderful. They,
in fact, they were the ones that suggested, and once you've got to the bottom of these statistics, why don't you sign up for our newsletter? And they put me on the link to receive that. With it pops up on my computer, I get an email, and then I know that the new stats are out to go look at it.
Well, I will be sure and tell them that. They're doing what they ought to do. One interesting thing on their job function, they are to listen to you about what you
are trying
think
to do.
You want to do, uh-huh. Or what number you think you want, and guide you to the right number, not give you only one. So classic example would be calling in, I want to put an escalator in this contract because this ship isn't going to be built until 10 years, and we've got to make sure we're protected as we buy materials over that 10-year period. And they might say, so I want such and such a number. And what our people say is, well, most people in this situation use this number, and here's why, and give them both. So we're not making the decision for you, but helping you make the decision.
That's fabulous. And having used it myself, I know that it is a service that was truly beneficial to me. So your staff actually travel throughout the Southeast. They visit companies and they ask them to share confidential information. Tell us a little bit about that.
They do travel. There are actually a lot of collection protocols, travel being one of them. Back when I joined the Bureau, we had two protocols. One was mail. We had what we would call a shuttle form. So if you were in our survey, say it was a monthly survey, you would give me January, and in February, I would send you the shuttle form showing you what you told me in January and asking you to fill in February. Computers changed all sorts of things, other than, is it necessary to talk face-to-face to an executive in a company? And what we have found over time is the more complex the survey, the more detail we need, we get better response by having a real live person. Some companies say, what is the source of the data? Lock us in a room and give us the payroll records. Others want to actually participate as we go through lists. Industrial prices, the ECI Employer Cost Index, and consumer prices, we all do in person. The rest of the surveys, we use all sorts of protocols. Some people prefer the telephone, call me every month and I'll tell you. Others want a fax information. We have what's called TDE, which is a phone system, telephone direct entry, where we remind you that you agreed to give it to us and you call up and key it in on your telephone. We have data collection centers. We have four of them throughout the country, one of them here in Atlanta, where we have, I have 103 people who are at a computer with headphones on 8 hours a day talking to employers because they prefer somebody to call them. We actually, the protocol reflects what the respondent wants. The interesting to most people is, why don't you use email? That's how everybody communicates. Our fear on email is it is the protocol most prone to problems with confidentiality.
Maybe so, hacking or even somebody else reading somebody's email and answering it or asking questions.
Right. So we teach our people that's the last resort. But if the respondent says, I'm going to email you or you're not going to get it, then even so, they read a little paragraph that pretty much says you're acknowledging that we can't protect what you send us on the internet.
Sure.
But we sure will take it as opposed to not getting anything.
Well, I didn't know that you had quite so many people. And if you have 100 in the Southeast, I would imagine that's probably reflective of those that are across nationally. We've got quite a lot of people going out and getting that survey data, whether it be by phone, by, to your point, in the car, visiting people, and all these other means and methods. How do you ensure that the data that you collect on salaries, employment, benefits, and workplace injuries are kept confidential?
Let me just add one thing before I tell you that. We actually have about 250 people here in the Southeast office.
Okay.
100 of them are in this data collection center. 90 of them are full-time economists who do this travel or who talk to you on the phone, and about 52 are part-time employees who collect the Consumer Price Index on a monthly basis.
Great, great.
But to your real question on confidentiality, it is critical to the BLS success that employers throughout the country trust us to protect their information. We put a pledge on all BLS forms that the information will be used only for statistical purposes. And what that means is only BLS employees and our agents, such as these 100 contract workers here in Atlanta, or employees of state agencies who work with us on statistical programs, will ever have access to the company's information. So once we get data, we assign a survey number to that information, so the name never goes on a file. We make it as hard to identify somebody, an individual, as we can. And the main thing, respondents to our surveys are protected by a law we call CIPSI. It's Confidential Information Protection Statistical Efficiency Act of 2002. Don't ask me to say that again. But CIPSI states that information acquired by the BLS for exclusively statistical purposes under a pledge of confidentiality must be used by BLS employees and agents only for statistical purposes. And then the paragraph that doesn't get a whole lot of show but is there is that any BLS employee or agent who knowingly or willfully discloses identifiable information, and just for your information, the very fact that you are talking to us, even if you say, I won't give you anything, that's confidential. We can't tell anybody that we even talk to you. But if, for whatever reason, someone would disclose this information, that person would be subject to imprisonment for not more than 5 years, fines of not more than $250,000, or both. We're really serious about protecting information, and I'm proud to say do not have on record any incident of our releasing information where you could identify someone.
And I agree with you. In today's world, any financial data has to be maintained. CFOs are very concerned about that, their own data, and certainly in them releasing it to you, it's great to know about that that law and rule and protocol that really jail time, I think, tends to make people act, or the risk of jail time. So let's assume some of our listeners are interested in knowing about the BLS data. How do you get access to the data, the website, mailing list, and such?
Okay, you mentioned our website, www.bls.gov. That's the only thing you need to remember. From that site, you can contact, you get phone numbers for individuals who are responsible for specific programs. Say you have a real technical question, you can get right to the source, either in our regional office or our national office, who would be responsible for the national program. You can subscribe to news releases. You can also,
and that's from BLS.gov.
Correct. Same thing. And you can also tell us to stop sending you the release. You're tired of it, or you want to go directly to the website and get it, because you can get it as soon as we release it. If you're in the South, and I assume most of your listeners are down here, we are the regional office. We cover North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Florida, Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, and Alabama. And let me just give our phone number. This is a direct number to the four economists who will explain anything you want to know. 404-893-4222.
Wonderful. And actually, just so that you're aware, Janet, we are listened to on three continents. So we have quite a wonderful array of listeners. Last month, I got a report saying that there were 3 new listeners in Peru. So I guess there was some kind of press release about us in Peru.
That's wonderful.
So let's talk a little bit. I'm sure CFOs throughout the country are interested in and use the BLS data on a regular basis. Maybe it's coming from their financial planning department or such. How can we as CFOs help bureaus collect accurate information?
I'm so glad you asked that question. You can support us. The simplest is to let other officials in your company know that you use BLS data. What we do when we say we run a sample and you were a sample member, one of our economists will contact whoever we either know in the company or we consider them an authorizing official, as high as the CEO, head of HR, head of finance. So you first have to have talked to someone who has the authority to say, yes, we will participate in the survey.
So can we call that number you mentioned a minute ago and say, hi, I'm John Smith in X Corporation. I'd like to participate in the survey.
No, you can't do that because that would be considered a voluntary. We call you.
I see.
And that's just for statistical purposes. We have all sorts of protocols on picking the sample. But once we get to that authorizing official who says yes, our next question to him is, to whom would you like me to talk to get this information? I'll be calling, stopping by, whatever. Either
they'll give you the delegate name.
They'll give you the delegate name, correct. So it's very, very important for a CFO who uses our information, or even if you don't use it on a regular basis, if you value what we're doing, is to let others who might be on the phone when we ask, will you give us information? Because
it talks to your credibility.
It does. Mm. And it also, some people who might not know that executives in the company are using the information, it might be easier to say no. If they know, they might say yes, and we could get in the front door.
Absolutely. Well, I love to do a shout out for my guests, so that's a good shout out. So I have a loaded question, and this really is a loaded question. Is the recession really over? Because certainly in the Southeast, some days it doesn't feel like it.
Excellent question. Let me tell you a little bit about recessions. The National Bureau of Economic Research, located in Massachusetts, officially declares the timing of a recession. They have their own way of doing it. So I can't even tell you exactly what they look at. But according to the NBER, the recession, this one officially started in December 2007 and ended in June 2009. Ended in 2009. At the start of the recession, the unemployment rate was 5%. And although the recession ended in June of 2009, we're now at an unemployment rate of 9.1.
And it has been higher than that. It's dipped down.
It has been. So officially, the recession is over. If you watch CNN this morning, they were talking about the fear of a double-dip recession. And that indicates a lot of people are feeling just like you on, is it really over? In a real double-dip, it would be a recession starts, then we start a recovery, and before we really recover, it dips again. So there actually is
it's a bit like the roller coaster. You right. Think you're on the bottom of the one, and then you go up and you're coming down again.
Correct. But indeed, if we enter another recession, which a lot of people think we will, it will be recorded as a new recession. Let me add one thing. If we had a graphic, it would be easier to explain. When you talk to people like me on recovery, if you think of just a simple line graph where you got the zero line going across. When you think of growth, you think above the line in black. And you think of job loss, you think below the line in red. Statisticians and economists get excited, even if over a three-year period we're in the red, when the red line gets shorter than it was the month before. So for us to say we are recovering, we are getting better, it means the line was getting closer to that zero line so it could turn black. So if you're a numbers person, we kept thinking things are really looking good. If you're a real person, sure. It didn't feel good.
Sure.
And there's still so many unemployed. And I know it's difficult for someone who has tried so hard to get a job and doesn't have one to hear that the government says the recession's over. But this has been a very sluggish recovery.
Mm-hmm. It certainly has. And there are families that perhaps mother and father and one of the children have all been impacted by some kind of layoff and unemployment and such, whether it be temporary or at this point some of them are what I would call semi-permanent.
Right. Interesting thing. I do a lot of public speaking. And starting around 2006, I would say to the audience, raise your hand if you know someone unemployed. And very few hands would go up. As we got into the recession, and now, I don't even ask it anymore, everybody will raise their hand. And it's not my friend's neighbor. It's my wife, my husband, my cousin. And it's a very personal recession, and it's been very, very difficult for everybody.
It has. It has. Well, Janet, it has been a pleasure having you on the show. I'm going to ask you one final question, and we ask all of our guests, and I may be asking you somewhat to trot or tango on the run on this one, but we ask all of our guests, what is your CFO tip of the month? From your perspective, purveying the land of the BLS, what is your CFO tip of the month?
I have two. One would be by encouraging your company to participate in BLS surveys, you are ensuring that BLS is able to provide reliable, accurate data on the economy. Critical to us. The other would be, specifically to a CFO, is make a practice of checking the BLS website for the latest information on the economy. It's free, it's up to date, and it's accurate.
Love that tip. Thank you very much. Well, from a formal perspective, I really would like to thank you, Janet. Thank you, Janet Rankin. It has been a pleasure speaking with you today, learning about your role and learning about the wonderful work that the BLS does. So thank you very much.
And thank you for having me.
And we would like to wrap up the show thanking our contributor for the news article, CFO.com, and to our sponsors, Delaney Consulting, providing CFOs and controllers to Fortune 1000 companies and small businesses alike. For more information about Delaney, please go to DelaneyLLC.com. Thanks also go to Financial Executives International, the preeminent association for CFOs and financial executives. Their website can be found at financialexecutives.org. And last but not least, National Association of Corporate Directors, advancing exemplary board leadership for directors by directors. See their website at nacdonline.org. This and other thought leadership from today's CFO is available right from your computer at cforadio.com. If you are a CFO or know of one who'd like to be a guest on the show, please contact us via the web. Thanks for listening to CFO Radio. This is Lorraine Chilvers signing off. Until next time.